welcome to a very special edition of the Portsmouth Running Podcast. On this show, we are going to chat with none other than my co-host, who is enjoying all this newfound fame after winning the 2023 Tunnel Ultra. Welcome, Dave. And
first of all, just a huge congratulations, because we haven't had much time to kind of catch up apart from now. And obviously, when I spoke to you, we haven't. No. You were not with it when I spoke to you immediately after the race. But massive congrats, mate, on the winner of the Tunnel 2023. How are you feeling?
Cheers. Oh, yeah, good. Bad.
Yeah, well, I'd say you're sounding a lot better. You're sounding a lot better than you were a few days ago. So you're on the mend.
Yeah. So if where do I start, really? So
it's a hard question.
The first thing to say is that the half mile walk back to the car was harder than any part of the whole race.
Yeah, because you can't park anywhere close to it, can you? It's just like
it was awful. It was absolutely grim. And I think that's when you phoned me, and there was this, like, you were staring back at me, and I was just like probably hearing voices and seeing things.
You probably thought I was trying to help you help recommend some of that aftershave and perfume at Debenhams. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dude, like, listen, I mean, you must still be in like such a spin in your head, because yeah, what a weekend. I mean, I saw you on Friday before you left for a coffee. Yeah. And you were looking pretty relaxed, but yeah, it seems like that hunt to gather a coffee did you well.
Yeah, I was. So I don't know if we spoke about it previously, but in the lead up to the race, I've had these pretty crappy kind of like right sided hip problems,
yeah,
and groin problems. And what it turns out to be is that where life gets in the way sometimes, you drop something, don't you? And I've dropped a lot of mobility, and apparently my SI joint and my hips weren't moving properly. So went for one massage, was hoping to get some exercises, didn't get some exercises. And so I went to another guy who just absolutely nailed it. As soon as I messaged him, he said, over the next week, do all of these stretches and I'll see you on Wednesday night and we'll give you a good massage. So that anxiety was there.
It was biting.
Yeah. But I was dead up for it. So we went for coffee and I chilled out for a little bit, got some home comforts in before spending 48 fucking hours inside a dark tunnel.
Mate, unbelievable. So listen, I got to find out. Obviously, you took the train up, because I remember you got driven to the station after our coffee and stuff. You had a nice peaceful journey up there, just kind of thinking about what was going ahead and stuff like that. But when you arrived, did you recognise any of the other runners and stuff? Did you know a few of them?
Oh, hell yeah, man. You know, it's a little bit like the track 100, isn't it, where you sort of have that anxiety going into it, and then when you get there, you end up chatting to people you know. So that was quite nice, and there was lots of people there, that familiar faces from like Hardmores and other Cobain events and Centurion events and all that kind of thing, and 37 Nutters standing at the opening of the tunnel. It's like, I know that you've done it as well. You've had a crack at it.
I've had a crack at it, yeah.
There was something like deeply humbling about the journey there, about this kind of, there was this sort of like sense of peace before war and chaos almost. And like, it's only running. And we mustn't forget that it is only running. We're going into something we love, but it turns out some of the things that we do that we love end up hurting quite a lot, or can take a long time, and that brings out that kind of like experience, doesn't it, and that test.
Yeah.
And because I knew this was going to take a long time, I was just like, that's cool.
Okay. You're at peace with it.
It was like a humbling experience going there. I can't say more than that, really, but
I know what you mean. I think I had a similar kind of thing, like taking the train up when I went to the race, just knowing like where you're going and the format of the race, and just kind of trying to kind of set it right in your mind. And it is, like you say, it is quite humbling, and it's kind of like a peaceful thing, really.
Yeah. There's like a deep unknown about it as well, isn't it? Like mythical tunnel. I'd you know, I've wanted to do this for a few years now. And
I know, yeah.
Kind of signed up and then COVID cancelled it. And then I think last year it wasn't on, and the year before it was up in it was like October or something. And that was the year that I did on that badly. And yeah, so I've been waiting a few years to do it and had lots of opportunities to go down and check out the tunnel. But I was too scared to, because I thought, if I go and check the tunnel out, probably not going to want to do it. So yeah. I just want to like go and recce it on my first lap.
Good.
And then we'll go from there.
But it keeps it fresh, doesn't it? It's like if you went there and like yeah. did a recce run or something, you might like end up going through it a few times and thinking, oh my God, you know, you just never quite know how you're going to respond to it. So
no, you don't. Yeah. It's like the you know, when we did the track,
yeah,
and I went around the track for 4 hours and I thought, this is awful. I'm gonna hate this. It was all right at the end, but
yeah. It's like once you're there with people and it's the actual event, it changes things up completely. But yeah, mate, I'm unbelievable. So listen, was it the same format from like that he always does, when you kind of arrive there, you kind of dump your stuff as close to the kind of edge of the tunnel as you can? And I know people listening to this may have seen some of the photos that were being distributed through the day and stuff on social media, that you can see everyone kind of lining up before the race and everyone's got their stuff on the side. But did you get a good spot that you were happy with, or were you stuck outside?
Yeah, well, we weren't allowed to go into the tunnel, but then I think on the second day it rained basically for the whole race.
Oh, right.
People started putting their chairs inside the tunnel.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, less than 10 minutes out of the tunnel entrance, so it wasn't too bad. But I was sat there talking to your mate Gareth Allen.
Oh yes, yeah. Well, I'm keen to find out from you what happened to Gareth, because it was like 5 laps in.
Wow. Oh yeah, no, he didn't stay for very long.
No.
But I saw him just as he had stopped, and he said that he'd been sick at one end of the tunnel.
Oh no.
Okay, fair enough. Well, good luck, and I hope you're okay. And Frank for a bit, he's cool. And Carl Baxter was there, and you know, Adrian Austin and stuff. So lots of familiar faces, and Karen Webber.
Ah, oh, yes, lovely, you know, Karen.
It was good vibes. It, like, you know, for a race that distance, you expect it to be a little bit kind of. Everyone's be on edge a little bit, but no one really was, and there was some good laughs going on. So,
oh, awesome. Then
we had our photo taken together. And then the name, the Happy Runner, he took her bloody shoes off and like started the race in barefoot and ran to like the first. I know. I thought this is going to be hard enough without doing it with my shoes on.
Oh, blimey! Nutter. Is that so, Vic Owens? Yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, Vic Owens, yeah. Okay, yeah, because I've seen she's done a lot of barefoot running, like via her Instagram profile. So, but did she stay without shoes for the time she was there?
No, she did a fair chunk in five fingers.
Okay. Geez, what next? There's going to be people like doing the tunnel, like crawling naked over broken glass or something like next. It's just people just going to keep taking it to the next level.
So did, a marble along with their nose.
Yeah. Did you start at 3 p.m.? So was it like a kind of a 3 o'clock start?
Yeah, so I think it was half three start.
Okay.
And, you know, everyone sort of filed into the tunnel and started very slow. Other than this one guy that I nicknamed Turbo German, he went off like he was running sub 3 hour marathon. Like, he was flying.
Really?
Every time I went past, I was like, congratulations, you're going very fast, thinking surely you can't sustain this pace, because it would have been very, very impressive if you sustained that pace, but I don't think he lasted more than about 30 miles or something like that.
Yeah, okay. Maybe his aim was to get the fastest ever marathon in a dark tunnel.
Yeah, maybe.
So
he would have nailed that.
Yeah. But listen, I tell you what, because I tracked the race, and I know lots of people did, like we tracked it through the weekend, and it was very exciting watching. It's the most excitement I've ever had watching what looks like an Excel spreadsheet the whole weekend. With your name on it.
There's no like No dot watching.
No. Exactly. Probably just as straightforward as the format. But you started well. I think you were kind of in about 20th place and top 20 or something like that. And I thought, that's good. He started smooth, because I know that you kind of like to do that, and then you eventually kind of climb the ladder, which is like typical of your races, because you've passed me so many times on races before. You know, I get the shoot off quickly one, and then get passed later on. But it was good. You kind of slowly started climbing the ladder, and then you were kind of in second place and third place, and then third and second, and then there was somebody who was like, who managed to maintain like two laps ahead of you. Is this this guy that went off quickly?
It might have been, yeah. It might have been Turbo German.
Did you get to chat to him? Did you get to chat to him a lot?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Okay. Just as he went past, and you go, "Oh, you're looking strong."
Cool. How did you find like the footsteps in the tunnel, Dave? Because like I found like you could almost get to know the sound of certain people's shoes and footsteps and stuff. Were anybody wearing like any of the Vaporflies or Alphaflies or anything? Where they sound?
Yeah. So I was wearing a pair of Vaporflies, and you could definitely tell me coming. And then there was Carl Baxter wearing some Alphaflies, and they were even more prominently sounding. Yeah. You could hear him a mile off.
Yeah.
But you said to me that the tunnel was quite kind of meditative. Guy Bettinson told me as well that, you know, it's just like a meditative environment.
Yeah, it is.
And
yeah.
I think that there's two things that can happen there, is that you either embrace the monotony and the silence and the peace of the tunnel,
mm-hmm.
or you let it wind you up. You're doing the same thing and seeing the same thing. And I think that I don't know if this is true of anyone. I'm just sort of like, you know, speculating, but I think some people get a bit wound up by the monotony of it, whereas I found like the whole experience quite relaxing.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
It had its moments, don't get me wrong. I mean, I was cursing the place. It is one of the worst things I've ever done. But when you stopped and there was no background noise and it was just totally peaceful, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be,
or yeah.
people made it out to be.
I think the idea of it is a lot worse than like it actually is when you're there. For me, it's like the way I describe it, using a bit of alliteration, is it's a wrapped up route. It's like bundled for you. It's like in a nice, it's like wrapped up in a warm blanket, and you don't have to worry about where you're going or.
It's funny you should say that, because I was talking to a psychologist and psychiatrist about it today, and they started talking about being in the womb.
Yes. Yeah. True. Yeah. Yeah. No. I thought about it like that as well. Yeah. Yeah, it's like almost like a comfort. There's something, yeah, there's just something really appealing and safe about it. You know, you can't fall off the edge. You can't run off sideways, left or right, and not know where you're going. You're just in that sausage the whole time.
Yeah, you can't get lost. Anything like that. Well, even though one person that I met, she looked completely out of her tree.
And she
was like, I don't know where I am. Where am I? I'm totally lost. And I was like, go this way or this way? Which way do you want to go? She was like, to the end. I was like, I gave her a big hug. And I was like, that way is to the turnaround point. That way is to the start and finish.
Oh, bless. Dave, did you really just double check?
Very well.
Did you double check that she didn't just exit the tunnel and carry on going straight, and she's still running along the country somewhere?
Probably is somewhere.
So brilliant. So was there much kind of chit chat going on between you guys, like in the tunnel? Did you? Because I guess like you're always passing people, or like did you get to run alongside people and get some good conversation?
There wasn't a lot of conversation. There was a bit of encouragement and saying hello and stuff. But I think there were three rules, which were: one was can't run side by side. The other was don't sleep in the tunnel, and probably the other one was either no sticks, no headphones, or don't take any support from everyone, like that. So you couldn't really people. I mean, there were people chatting. In fact, there were two guys. One of them, I think, one of them finished actually, but just chatted non-stop. And I said to them, like, you guys must have so much to talk about. Every time I go past you, you've been chatting for like 10 hours now.
Oh my God. Wow.
And he went, yeah, my mates hate running with me because I won't shut up.
Amazing, amazing. And listen, I've got to ask as well, like, you had a difference this year to or a different experience to what I had, because they turned the lights off for you, and it just so happened that the year I did it, they turned the lights, well, they left the lights on overnight. I don't know why that happened. There must have been like a somebody or a grounds person or something must have thought, oh, there's an event on, I'll leave them on. But obviously they went off, and I know lots of people are curious and to hear about like what the environment's like, and particularly about the music. How did you find the music in the tunnel?
The first day I found it quite civilized. Second, on the Saturday, I just sort of like tolerated it a bit. And then on the Sunday, I was dreading it coming on.
Really?
Because, yeah, on that on the Sunday, on the sort of 40 hours onwards.
Yeah.
I was just dreading it because I was so tired. I was hallucinating, and I was getting really grumpy with the tunnel as well. And, in pain.
Yeah.
And there was everything else to deal with, and then this fucking violent music comes on that's out of time, abrasive at times, and then doesn't make any sense. And it was just something I didn't want to deal with.
Did it give you any nausea or anything? Did it actually make you feel like physically sick in any way, or was it just all just like stop, just like, you know, having a niggle in your head?
No. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
It's just a bit of a surreal experience, isn't it? Like
having
this violin music points into the middle of a tunnel that you're doing a race in. So.
Yeah, it's quite funny how they colorize as well. There's like each of the speakers has like a different color.
They're like little eyes, aren't they?
And there's,
I'm sure one of them reacted to when you went past it.
Oh, right.
Because you go past it, suddenly you go, boom.
Yeah, oh gosh. Yeah, and the rocks as well, like the side of the walls reminded me of, there was an old film in the 80s, which was like a sequel to The Wizard of Oz. It was called like Return to Oz.
Mm.
And there was like this rock demon that used to come out of the rocks and talk to Dorothy. And the rocks in the tunnel have the same shape as that. So I can kind of, because of that film, I didn't have hallucinations because I didn't last that long, but you can almost see how the rock shapes like form things, like form like faces and stuff, because they're all deformed and the light hits them at different angles and stuff. How did you find the walls? Because people always talk about the walls.
The walls were the one thing that my mind started to kind of mess with me about.
Yeah.
Because they almost did look like their faces in them anyway.
Mm, that's it.
And there was one point that I saw like two people standing there. And it, like on every lap, you just constantly see these faces in the walls on the second night and onwards, particularly on Sunday. It just got even more intense. Of people standing at the side, people standing next to you, faces coming out, you know, big paintings, like Renaissance paintings at one point I started to see on the side of the walls.
And,
and like arms coming out, and you know, almost like people grabbing you. And you because there were like pedestrians and bikes going through at times, you would see two people stood up in the distance, and you'd think they were just standing there chatting. And at one point, I could see tattoos and long blonde hair. And then when I got there, it was just the wall and the rock.
Yeah, absolutely weird. Wow.
Yeah. So in like towards the end of the race, I think maybe in the last 10 laps, when I got to the end, I would just stare up at the sky and sort of slap myself in the face to just get a little bit of normality in me. Because it did start to get incredibly weird, you know, and so weird that when people like running clubs came in and would say hello and like give you some encouragement, that I would just look at them out the corner of my eye and just be like, cheers, you know, because I didn't really want to. Because I was just in this weird space, like it's like I've been up for 2 nights taking drugs.
Well, not that you know what that's like, Dave. Oh, dude. So listen. So the psychological battle was obviously like clear, like clearly there. Like, I mean, you know, running 200 miles outside in nice views is hard enough. Doing it in the tunnel, all the weird things that you hear and see kind of covered that. What did you eat? Like, how did you? Obviously, you've got your stuff at the base of the tunnel. So every 2 miles, you get to your stuff. How did you? Did you have meals planned, or did you have any pasta or anything like every so often?
Yeah, so I took 3 pasta pots with me. I took a lot of gels and a few like bars of chocolate and some bobs. But I can't really remember what's in now.
Your goo packets.
Yeah, but they had like cheer charge bars there as well.
Okay.
And mini cheddars. So what I ended up doing, so I've had cheer charge bars in long races loads of times, and they tend to go down pretty well.
Okay.
Other than when they don't and they hit the back of your throat and you end up throwing up, which happens a few times. But what I was doing was every 25, 30 minutes, I would take a gel and a mini cheer charge bar together.
Okay.
It was almost like a double drop gel. And nice. And that kept me strong pretty much for the whole 48 hours. And it was when other people started to slow down on that. It's the first Saturday morning to Saturday daytime. I was still going at a decent pace. So
okay.
I think and just, you know, ate pretty much the whole time. I keep on losing my train of thought. I'm still totally nuts.
Dave, don't worry about it, mate. Don't worry about it.
Actually, what happens on the second night when things really started to get weird for me, and you know, you've been going for 30 odd hours, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you're on about 130 miles, 120 miles. Yeah, you've got 70 miles left to go. Yeah,
exactly. So all of a sudden just decided to change what I was doing. I started to walk more up the hill, because it's uphill one way and then downhill the next, isn't it?
Basically, yeah.
Hill reps and stuff.
Yeah.
And just changed what I was doing, and then things started to go really, really wrong for me for a few hours. I got to 150 miles and was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I was going so well, and then all of a sudden, I've changed what I'm doing, it started to go wrong. So I think I'd had a nap on the ground for, I think that might have been the time when I'd gone for a nap on the gravel. And thought, right, I'm going to go lay down for 10 minutes. When I get up, I'm going to get the food in my pockets. Then I'm going to go back to how I started this round. I was strong then.
Okay.
And just made that conscious effort to go back to the original plan. As soon as I did that, I suddenly got going again and was running really strong and, you know, was eating well and was good to the end pretty much.
That's amazing, dude, that you managed to change. You managed to pick up, I guess, the courage or the mental fortitude somewhere to make that change like that far into the race is amazing.
Yeah. So wow. I think what the issue was, it was one of the guys, I think, might have been Paul, that said to me, to be honest, we can just walk it in from here.
And I said
myself, there is fuck all chance of me walking 50 miles. I'm sorry, but just not doing it.
Yeah.
And that like triggered me to go like, you know, come on, you've got to try and get going again. And it seemed to work. And there's this picture of me kind of like lying in the gravel that seems to be popular.
Dude, that's
the news website at the moment.
That to me is like, I mean, it basically just depicts that race so well. I mean, it's like you just on those dirty, filthy, because the tunnel's quite dirty, like the walls look quite like almost like a train's been going through it for years. You know, it's very sooty. And there's you just lying there with you got like one hand over your face, just like, probably just leave me alone for a few minutes. I just want to die for a while.
Yeah. I was just trying to get the light out of my eyes so I could have 5 minutes nap.
Yeah. Was it, did Cassia take that photo of you?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Cassia's photos are so good. Like,
yeah.
And obviously she's been on the show as well. She's been one of our guests. She's amazing. Did she come and watch for the weekend?
Yeah, she was helping out too. It was good to have a friendly face. But interestingly, you say about the soot in there. is that I didn't really realise at first how dirty it was in there. And then look down at my Vaporflies and they're absolutely ruined. They're totally black.
Wow.
And when you look at the finishing pictures of me, I've got black soot all over my face, all over my clothes. So I've obviously just like put my hands on the wall and rubbed my face. My feet, my ankles were absolutely like caked in this black soot.
You look like one of the kids from like Oliver Twist.
Yeah.
mate, unbelievable.
You know, like there was a good thing about the mind games that play to try and get you through. And with 25 laps to go, it was 50 miles. I was like, you know, cutting it down to five lap chunks.
And I'd okay. be like,
I've got this, then I can get to 20, and then that'll be 20 to 15, and then when I've got to 15, then I'm just five away from 10, and then when I've got to 10, then I'll be in single figures almost.
Yeah.
And I was just playing these, thinking, you know, like believing that I was like getting closer to the end, and it started to work. There was this point where the end just wasn't, it just wasn't coming. You know, it wasn't getting any closer.
Yeah.
When I got a pot noodle off of Mark, and he was like, "Oh mate, 38 miles is a piece of piss." And I was like, "Yeah, I know." So it's like went and cracked on with it.
Brilliant. He's really encouraging, isn't he, Mark? He's a good guy.
Yeah. It's a crazy distance. Yeah. I'm just beating up now.
How are your feet? Because obviously we don't normally exchange such personal photos, Dave. But I did see a picture of your feet, and it was like somebody had morphed them with like some kind of like filter and made them look bigger.
Yeah.
But it's almost like they've been inflated a little bit with air.
Yeah, I've definitely got cankles. my right cankle is massive.
Are they still swollen?
A couple of black toenails, but only one blister. So that's not
one blister,
bad, I reckon.
Wow. Yeah. Did you keep those shoes on for the whole run?
Yeah.
Okay, so the hope is.
I finished with sore feet, and then I thought they're probably not the best for long distance. And then now, with a bit more hindsight, my feet aren't in that bad condition.
Okay.
And they're probably quite a good Vaporflies, I reckon.
Interesting. Because obviously you don't want to talk about future races quite yet. You know, you want to get freshen up your mind a little bit. But obviously the other big news that you and I are in this year's Spartathlon race. I've been thinking about wearing some of the fast, or a pair of fast shoes for the road portion of the run.
I don't know if you will
be doing that.
Rocket X for the whole thing, man.
Yeah, Rocket X 2s. I think that's going to be the shoe choice for me.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go Vaporflies or a pair of Rocket X that you can get for me.
Yeah. I think mine. I'll need to keep mine like locked away because I don't want to put any more miles in it.
No.
But yeah. So listen, how was Heather and Hetty at the end? Was it nice having them there for the last few laps?
Yeah, it was lovely. And I think I saw them with four or five to go.
Okay.
The weird thing was that I was only just coming around the corner of the end of the tunnel, and then I could hear "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
somehow Hetty knew that that it was me.
Wow.
And then she, yeah. So it was really nice to see him. And then I think I had five to go, and Heather said, "Look, the person behind you is catching up really quickly."
Yeah.
Shell says she needs to get a wiggle on. And I was like,
okay.
So I smashed out like two really fast laps, and then I'd like three to go after that, and was like, right, started to know that I was going to do it. And I
was, yeah. Was that the first time you knew, like, I've got this now?
Yeah, I think when I started to get down to single figures, and actually there's, you know, like if we had done this in a few days' time, I might have been a bit more articulate and remember things in a better order and more logical order than we spoke.
No, I'd rather hear you like this. I think I'd rather hear you like this.
But there was, you know, there was this sense of, particularly in the second 100 miles, because it took a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to tell myself, like, you know, you will get there, but you're going to have to be patient.
Yeah.
And I was doing the maths and the mind games to try and make myself feel better. But I kept on having to go, look, you know, you will get there. You just be patient. Just be patient and chill out. And chilling out was not something that I had at long last. Okay. I think that I've been doing quite a lot of kind of listening to meditation. I've been doing Wim Hof, lots of different bits like that more often nowadays. So I can sort of head to a body scan quite quickly. And whilst I'm running, and get that kind of like sense of relaxation and mindfulness and peace.
Okay.
And one of the things, like one of the most inspiring quotes that I've heard recently over the last few years is from Nimsdai from 14 Peaks.
Okay.
And he says that when you think you're totally fucked, only about 20% fucked. And that stuck with me because I know that previously when I think it was when I DNF'd the hill, and I DNF'd it for that. It's the only one that I've done. DNF'd it because I was a pussy. And that's because I thought I was totally fucked. And I wasn't at all.
You could have carried on.
Every time I was started to get those kind of like negative thoughts or was a bit sore, I'd go, right, am I totally fucked? Am I? And then I'd do like a quick, like 2-second body scan. I'd go, no, I'm not actually. I've just got slight tips. And then I'd forget about it and crack on.
And it
was like a real kind of like nice little bit to have in my like skill box, you know,
like a little mantra you used.
So and it's not something that I've ever practiced before, because I've just been sort of naturally doing it as part of my life. My mind seemed to go right there really easily when I was running.
It's true though, like what you say, like you, like I know the DNFs I've had, or like most of them are due to that rule. Like I thought I was, but I wasn't. And there's just something that's made me stop. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's like meant to be or whatever, but yeah, I know what you mean. So one of the things I do similar to that is like, now I start asking myself, can you take one more step? And the answer is always yes. Always. I don't think I've ever yet had the thing where I can't take another step, because I think only then you would be truly, truly fucked. So
yeah, you would be, if you, you know, if you're about to fall down to the ground, then yeah, maybe you're fucked.
Yeah. and you do see those things, you know, like I mean, one race that comes into my mind is, you know, often at the elite level you'll see runners who are doing the marathon, like Callum Hawkins. That time he was doing the Commonwealth Marathon, and you know, he's literally running all over the road, like side to side in Australia or wherever it was, and he's collapsing at the side of the road, and then he's trying to get up and run. Still then, you know, that's kind of when you hit that point, I think, where you're like, yeah, okay, my body's telling me now, and it's literally going to shut me down. But often I think in these things you do stop. I don't know what it is that something breaks you, but that's what makes these races interesting, Dave. It's like, you know, you've got nutrition, you've got the tiredness, you've got the roots, you've got the cold, you've got the overnight running. It's like, this, that's what makes ultras like multi-dimensional, I think. And you've got to build those skills up, like you say. You've got a little skill box now that you can use and pull from through your experience. And yeah, man, you get these things through failure, you know. But not this time around. So what was it like when you got the medal put around your neck?
Yeah, so when you finish, and as soon as you finish, your brain goes, right, now body stop. And if you had more miles to go, then your brain would know that it needs more miles to go, so you wouldn't get stiff straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Is that making any sense?
It does. You know,
So on the final lap, I knew that I was going to do it, and I think my brain started to go, ah, right, cool, yeah, well, we don't need to do this anymore. So on the kind of like on the downhill bit, going back right down to the finish, My legs just suddenly started to go really, really, really fucking stiff. I was like, oh God. And it was honestly one of the most agonizing last like few hundred meters to the finish line, just trying to get these like solid legs moving. And then finished, and obviously very happy, it's a great relief, but was so mentally out of it that I wasn't able to really take it all in.
Okay.
Or to enjoy it to a full extent. Then got a handshake, and then Karen comes over and goes, I'm sorry, I've got it all wrong. You've got more to do.
Oh no.
I was like,
no.
I knew she was joking.
Oh my, that's a cruel joke.
It made me laugh, and I was like, right, go on then, I'll just go back and do another.
Yeah, you need to do another 10 laps.
Immediately had to do a, stood there, had the medal put around my neck, and had to do a bloody BBC interview to the camera.
Oh, Jesus.
And this guy was asking me all these questions. And maybe we can like share the link to the video, but
yeah, we will.
I'm not making a lot of sense because I think like they asked me about hallucinations and I'm just sort of talking. I do look like I've been up for a weekend on drugs, or you know, some of the people that you see at the last night of Glastonbury that can't string a sentence together properly, that are talking like semi-psychotic gibberish, and and are quite clearly kind of, you know, seeing things that aren't really there. So it was, it was interesting.
I should have sat down. Yeah.
And as soon as I sat down, I just thought that there's no chance I can get up from this chair.
Did you spend a few minutes in there just having something to eat or drink or something? Or?
Yeah. I just sat down, and then Michelle Maxwell, Coach Michelle, she's an absolute legend.
Yeah.
And Heather and Hetty. They started to kind of like take my clothes off and make sure that I kept warm, because I quite quickly started shivering.
Yeah.
And then the walk back to the car, man, fuck my life. It was awful. And it must have taken about 30 minutes to do half a mile.
Blimey.
And then in the car, I was like, I felt like I was answering to the radio, and the radio could read my mind. And was spontaneously falling asleep, like micro sleeps for a couple of seconds, bursting awake, and, like, thinking Heather had said something, stuff like that. And towards the end of the race, I started to get that feeling I had at Lon Lass, which was when I was eating, I was feeding someone else, or like I was feeding a female or something, and I was like disassociating with myself. And couldn't remember what I was doing. Like, I wasn't able to kind of understand what I was doing right there and then.
Yeah.
And was seeing stuff and putting myself into situations that quite really weren't true, that my mind was making up. So I think the second to last lap was when I saw the thing about where the Debenhams thing happened, which was totally fucking weird, because I got to the end of the lap and like said to BBC guy in heaven, I've just been outside Devon. And it like turned round and was so confused. I was like, what the fuck?
Wow. that's your brain. When your brain's done an ultra like this, it's like just as fatigued as your body. So you do reckon, like, as comforting as we've said the tunnel is, like, you do think that there is some psychological scarring that happens during the race? Like, it's unavoidable.
I think that I don't know if scarring is the right word.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Right, it pushes you, your body and your brain right to the limit. Yeah.
Some psychological fatigue, temporary fatigue.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
dude.
I'm still feeling it now. I've only just got my appetite back. I'm still not. Cognitive kind of processes aren't really ticking over properly. My thought processes are really, really slow at the moment as well, and I'm not able to kind of concentrate at work the best I can.
Do they know what you've done at work?
Yeah, so they're really, really, really proud and totally chuffed, and some of the patients have been really complimentary, and everyone's, you know, there is this sense of, why would you do that? That's amazing. Are you an idiot? Are you amazing? Like, people aren't really sure whether you've done something that's totally cool or totally fucking stupid. I'm very much it is a fucking stupid thing to do. I was thinking earlier, like, you know, it's obviously stupid, but it is quite cool. And the reason why do you do it? And
why do I
go with this? But if something is really easy, then you can just do it, can't you? And it's easy to do, and you're not going to get much kind of enjoyment out of it or reward from it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when you start to do kind of like longer ultras, you search for like a different type of reward or a different type of challenge. And that's what this is. This is a unique challenge that for a lot of people that is a very niche, unique challenge that I say a lot of people, that very few people are going to be interested in. But it's one of those tests in ultra running, isn't it? Like something like the Barclay Marathons, which is a really, really niche area of a really, really, really niche area, isn't it? You know, where you only get a select few of the best people doing it because it is the most challenging thing that you can do. And once you've ticked that box, you know, you've almost kind of like, you know, won the prize, haven't you? So it's like these incremental steps towards
somewhere
that is, you know, improved. I don't know if it's even proving anything. It doesn't prove anything. It's just a rewarding, hard experience.
Yeah. I think that's it. It is difficult to kind of, it's difficult to explain when you get asked, when someone asks, or you try and think like, why do I do it? Why do I set myself such a ridiculous challenge and stuff? But
yeah,
I think.
And if it was 20 miles, it wouldn't be worth doing. There's something about it being 200 miles in the dark in the tunnel. It's so ridiculous that it makes it like intriguingly worth doing.
I'm with you completely. I think there are different personality types. Yeah, so for some people that would be the worst possible thing they'd possibly do, and there is something inside of some characters that idea of doing it repulses them in such a way that they don't have that same curiosity, but they might be doing something, you know, else extreme that we'd find, you know, repulsive and stuff like that. I think everyone's got their kind of their dark extreme corners that they go to in whatever they do. And well, maybe not everyone has it, but I think the people that do, no matter whether it's running or like, you know, cave diving or what, you know, whatever it is, even if it's like a creative process that people do to an extreme, you know, like painters that are dedicating, you know, weekends entirely just to doing one drawing or something like that. Takes you to some really awesome faraway places, I think, it's the comfort thing as well, like you were saying, to feel such discomfort, to go so far away from comfort, makes the journey back to it, like to comfort, much more enjoyable. Like I just think you can
that's a good point.
Yeah, like the further away you go from, you know, into a corner in a room, you then turn around and realize how much space you've got behind you, like, and how much enjoyment and freedom to stretch out and stuff. And I think for me, that's kind of like why I do these things as well. And, you know, there is that morbid curiosity as to, you know, what is it going to be like?
The Power of Kabbalah by Yehuda Berg. That person talks about Kabbalah as a religion, basically. And they talk about living life in the 99% and living life in the 1%. And you have to do these things to touch the 1% to really understand what the true kind of beauty of life and the true meaning of life is. And once you touch that 1%, you find that out, you know, because most of our life is living in this kind of like monotonous 99% world where we can see the usual things, we feel the daily things, we go to work, you know, and that 1% might be the birth of your child, it might be finishing the tunnel, it might be playing in front of 100,000 people,
you know,
whatever it means to you, however you get that moment that truly means something to you, it's your 1%.
That's a great way of putting it. That 1%, it makes the other 99% whole and more visible and I completely agree, Dave. I completely agree. That's why next year we're going back to the tunnel, right?
So applications on the 11th. So there seems to be this like a little bit of competition between people that finished that I think is led by a couple of previous finishers
Guy and Carl.
Carl is one of them, Adrian's another, but are just desperate to get back and be the first two-time finisher.
So, okay, well, keep me posted because I'm,
I very much don't think that that is something that I want to do. But as ever with these things, you know, like when you're doing it and you go, this is the worst thing that I've ever done, and I'm never ever going to do it again. And this is one and done. And I'm proud that I've managed to do this. Never going back. Now, my rose tinted spectacles are on, firmly on, you know, I've been on BBC Evening News talking to a presenter about my experience and telling him about my psychotic Debenhams episode.
That's surreal in itself.
quite a surreal few days following, you know, with like random messages from people across the world telling me that I'm the best and they want to interview me and put me in their magazines and stuff like that. You know, it's just.
Yeah.
So it's just surreal.
I think, you know,
I'd be able to racist today, mate.
on that point, Abe, like you obviously told me you've been contacted by people and stuff, and I think all these people would be extremely lucky to have you on the show because like you're not in any way like arrogant or cocky with this stuff. You're very, very humble. And I think you like present running in almost its perfect way. Like, you know, you like it for all the right reasons and you're very encouraging to other people. You don't like, I don't think you're in it for any other reason or no other reasons. And you know, we've spoken about on the show many times. So I just think all these people would be very lucky to get you on. And I think you'd kind of present yourself very well and present Mark's races pretty well. Right. I'm sure. So, yeah.
There might be a few, F's and, you know, fucks and shits in there, though.
Well, you need that's what happens during the race, so.
Anyway,
I just want to quickly end off, Dave, because I know you want to go and sleep and it's late, and super keen to get this kind of show out tomorrow. However, the second place this year and new female course record was set. Agnieszka Kamińska, there we go. So she was 50, about 2 hours behind you. So yeah, she did really well.
Yeah, she was really catching up at one point, apparently.
She did very well. And then obviously Richard Hinson finished, Chris Sales finished, and Paul Southerns as well. So brilliant. That was really good. Excellent. Dave, listen, awesome to chat to you. I know you're going to go to sleep and you don't want to think about running, talk about running or anything for a little while. So good luck.
Give me a few more weeks.
We'll catch up for a run soon and catch up for some burger. Maybe I'll buy you a burger and stuff. Go to the merch and have a pint.
Yeah, and we'll start to think about Spartathlon next.
That's it, man. That's the next focus. And listen, thanks for your advice today because I have now entered the South Downs Way 100. So that's going to be my tune-up race. Mate. Listen, take care. Love to hear tea and get some sleep. See you soon.
Cheers, dude. Bye.
Cheers.